This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 179. I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 170 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Sev Tok about her ET contact experiences. Sev's ET contact started at age 10. She was a speaker at AlienCon in 2018, and her book is called You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. Sev is featured in the Canadian TV docuseries Encounter UFO, Physical Contact. She speaks at international conferences. She was the Master of Ceremonies at MUFON's International Symposium in 2022 and is MUFON's Assistant State Director for North Carolina, a field investigator, and on the Executive Committee of the Experiencer Resource Team. A planet and star system is named after her in the Star Wars series Andor. You can find Sev Tok's star system and planet in Wikipedia. Hi, Sev. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for asking me. I'm very happy to be here talking with you.
I've got a whole load of questions for you. When you were on last time, we talked about your book, which is called You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. And we talked about all sorts of experiences and things. Has anything happened since then? Have you had any, what you might call physical contacts, encounters with ETs? Or has your encounters changed over time and it's more to do with like consciousness or psychic stuff?
It's both. Since the book, or since we've talked, I continue to get markings on my bodies, geometric shapes and such. However, most of the contact has transferred to more of a conscious event, not so much 3D, but more happening through the dimensions.
Yeah, that's what I hear from other ET contact people who are having these experiences.
It's easier, I think, on many levels, not only easier for the human being, but easier for the ET too, because now that these military men are coming out and saying that they're shooting down UFOs out of the sky with psionics, what ET in his right mind would want to show up physically here. So it's really safe to communicate with us through our consciousness. And when we communicate through our consciousness, it's more than just this kind of dialogue. The other psi abilities are strengthened. So it's not only that we hear another being talking to us, but we can actually feel the information. Telepathy is not only hearing the words, but feeling those words. And so it's a more effective way of communicating telepathically than just using words.
And you feel that telepathic communication is kind of like you can't hide anything. It's impossible to lie using telepathy.
That's right. And that's why I think species that communicate telepathically tend to be loving and kind, because if you're a being that just wants to kill and hurt, then telepathically communicating is not for your benefit. So it's really for the ETs that have nothing to hide, that are loving and kind, have no personal agendas, that communicate this way.
But there are people who have experiences with the Greys, and they can say they were abducted and they had these horrible things happen to them. They were so scared and terrified and it was awful. And those Greys are telepathic. And it seems like those Greys aren't so loving and kind.
Well, it depends on the perspective. Because I had that same perspective. I used to think the Greys were evil. I was afraid of them for most of my life. And that's because I had adopted the perspective of a victim, which I had adopted in my 3D life too. I was trying to be successful and happy as a victim. I blamed everybody for everything that happened to me. And so when the Greys were communicating with me, I did the same thing. I thought, well, they're victimizing me too, just like my ex-husbands did. They're abusing me too. They're being mean to me. And it was actually the Greys that helped me realize what I was doing. And they helped me pop out of the victim vibe.
So what did they do? Was it one specific incident?
Well, the incident with the two red X's on my tush in 2017, that was such a loud message that I took it as a, moment where I can transcend and change. And so I decided to do that. I was very afraid, though. This wasn't easy because I had decided that I want to live my life as authentically as possible because I believe when you express your authenticity, that's when you're the happiest, the most successful, the healthiest, and all that. We've heard all this. And I couldn't, for most of my life, I could not express myself authentically because I had this huge secret. And the secret was that I was communicating with extraterrestrials or NHI, ETs, the supernatural beings, all of that, as many of us do. And as long as I hid that from myself, I could not operate in a very healthy fashion in my relationships, in my career, in my friendships, just as a family member, because I was operating from fear and I was trying to live in a half-aid way. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Because yeah. I wasn't completely aligned with myself. And when the two X's came, when the grays put the two X's, it shook my world. I was very confused. I was very afraid. And I decided, okay, why are the grays being so blatant with this message? Why did they burn two red X marks into my back? There's a reason for this. And it was to get my attention. And it got my attention. So I started communicating in a much more open fashion, in a much more accepting way, telepathically and with other beings. And the messages that were coming through were very loving, very supportive, very nurturing. And through that process, I realized, oh, I need to come out to myself. I had never come out to myself. That's the first step an experiencer needs to make, is to come out to yourself. I had to tell myself, I'm not crazy. This is real. And there's a good reason for this. This is not being done to ruin me. So how can I change my perspective so I can see how this is benefiting? And through the telepathic communication that I had, also through just deep introspection, just if you want to say talking to my higher self or talking to my inner self, I started to chip away at all the falsehoods I had created about who I am and the stupid definitions I had about myself. And it all came from just brainwashing. We're all brainwashed from society, from family and friends. And I started to see all the ways that I had been brainwashed and all the ways that I thought I was something that I'm not. And all of those things that I thought were negative. I wasn't going around thinking very positive things about myself. So when that started to change, that's when my life changed. And I really do believe that the grays helped me get there. I've come in contact with other beings too. But it was those two red X marks by the grays that really seemed to propel me onto this path of authenticity.
Well, after that incident, or those incidents with the red X's, did they start treating you differently when you met them? Was it a different process?
No, they never treated me differently. I just started to see them differently. The conscious memory I have of the gray putting the red X on my back, It was a short gray. So I've come in contact with short, medium, and tall. And so the short ones are the ones that seem to be more robotic. They're the sample takers and things like that. And I was very afraid of it because in that one instance, it did not telepathically convey anything to me. And that scared me. The lack of communication scared me. Because before, a tall gray had communicated with me. It was very loving. It was very kind and it was very respectful. So I realized, well, if the tall gray is being really nice and this little gray is not communicating with me at all, then why am I assuming that the little gray is evil and mean and wants to hurt me? It didn't do anything to hurt me. Nothing. But I perceived it that way. And then I started realizing, aha, it's all in my perception. It's all based on my own personal filters. And so as an experiencer advocate, I help experiencers around the world. And one of the things we do is to inspect their perspective. And this isn't just the perspective of how you see ETs, it's the perspective of how you see yourself in the 3D world. So as an experiencer, as you are unraveling what happened to you, you're also unraveling your humanness to live on Earth in a much more aligned fashion, in a happier way, in a more fulfilled way. So the work is grand. It's cosmic work.
Yeah, and when you say cosmic, I get the impression from people I talk to that it goes beyond our physical lives, and that there may be something connected with reincarnation. And you get the feeling that some ET experiences that you agreed to this before you were born, that this was part of the plan, that you would have these encounters.
Yes, and possibly having them before I came into this life as well. It's just a continuation. And my lineage, my family lineage of contactees and psychics and channelers, which I really wasn't aware of until I got older. Although when I was little, my father played psychic games with us and we bent spoons like Uri Geller. And my parents taught me how to meditate when I was in the fifth grade. And it's actually in the fifth grade when I had my first conscious memories of ET contact. So they're related.
So it was part of a plan then that you would have these encounters with them.
Possibly. It seems that way. It feels that way. Now, what am I supposed to do? Was it planned? For instance, oh, this is so interesting because I was just having a conversation with a client. I do soul purpose sessions with clients around the world. And so I was just having a conversation with a client about purpose, life purpose, soul purpose. I help people, I teach them how to channel. And so he had channeled some information and we were discussing it. It was really good information. I have been teaching people how to channel for about 15 years now, and everybody can channel. I have never met anyone that couldn't do it. And so one of the questions that he had asked this collective consciousness that he was communicating with was, what's my purpose? Why am I here? What's my mission? Actually, he used the word mission. What's my mission? And he heard, oh, you don't really have a mission. It can be whatever you want. And I've always heard that we don't have a specific soul purpose. That as humans, we like to make everything simple. So what's my purpose for being here? What's my soul purpose? Basically, it's to be here and to continually express your energy of love. That's it. Now, how can you express the energy of love to yourself? And that's where we might be calling that your soul purpose. So for instance, doing sessions with my clients expresses love to myself because I love to do it so much. Knitting is expressing love to myself because I love to knit. Anything that makes me feel like I am nurturing my needs and my desires, and I feel good and I feel happy, and I feel like I'm making not so much a difference, but that I'm radiating as much love as I can possibly radiate. And so for everyone, that's different. For some people, being a teacher makes them feel like that. For some people, being a scientist, being a writer, being a painter, whatever it is, then we can call that your purpose. But you can change it at any given moment. If you don't want to be a writer anymore, but you want to be an actor, okay, then that's your new purpose. Whatever it is, whatever, however you are expressing as much love as possible, that's your purpose.
And it gets really complicated, doesn't it? If you're dealing with ETs and having these contact experiences, which, you know, that's like the thing with the hybrids. Some people say, like David Jacobs, say it's quite sinister. It's almost like an invasion.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, it's like you're saying, it's how you frame it yourself is how you view it.
But exactly.
You've had
because
these...
it's I'm sorry.
Sorry, you've had these kind of hybrid encounters, haven't you?
Hybrid encounters?
Have you seen hybrid children?
I have.
And did you find that was a very loving, happy experience? Because some people I've talked to have said they saw the small hybrids and they were so skinny and they looked so pale and they were thinking, I don't want anything to do with this child. And the grey was saying, no, you have to hold it. You have to nurture it.
Okay, this is interesting. Have I shared with you the experience I had where I was healing two hybrid babies?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because it goes along. You just validated something in my experience, so thank you very much. I was in this office, it seemed like a doctor's office, and there was what seemed like a human male doctor standing next to me, and across from me what seemed like a human female nurse, but the nurse never turned her back. She had her back to me the whole entire time. I'm standing in front of this table, and they bring this little baby, put it on the table, and it was wrapped in a lot of cloth, lots and lots of cloth, and its little head was sticking out. And it had straight black hair. I remember that. And nothing was said. This was all kind of like telepathic communication between me and the doctor and the nurse and the baby. And I was under the understanding that I was doing my last test or my last assignment to see if I could really do this. So they put this baby in front of me. And the doctor said, okay, heal it, because the baby was spitting up blood.
Oh.
So I put my hands on it, and I'm healing it. Now, I'm not feeling anything towards it. Like, I'm not feeling this is my baby. I'm not feeling anything like that. I'm feeling really neutral. I'm loving it, but I don't feel attached to it. So I put my hands on it. I heal it. They take it away. Then they bring me another baby, also spitting up blood. I said, okay, heal this one. So I put my hands on it. But this time, this baby starts to roll off the table. So it was also heavily swaddled in cloth. So I grabbed the cloth, and as I grabbed it and pulled it, and the baby was rolling off the table, I saw its body, and I saw its neck, and it was like the size of my pinky, even though its head was like a regular baby head size. Its neck was like this skinny.
Yeah.
Its arms were skinny, and I went, and then that's all I remember. Another time I was shown a newborn in a tube, just floating in a tube. And I was in a dark room, and the tube was a little taller than I was, about as wide as I am. And the baby was floating on the top of this tube. I actually drew a picture of it. It's in my book. And I'm looking at this baby in this tube in this dark room, and its eyes are open. And they're the bluest eyes I have ever seen in my life. And by the way its legs were situated, I couldn't tell its sex, but I intuitively knew it was a boy. And I'm looking at this baby, confused. Why is there a baby in a tube? Why am I even looking at a baby in a tube? And that's when I felt something behind me, and I turned around, and there were three grays, tall, medium, short. And this is before I even knew grays came in different sizes.
Yeah.
And this is when the tall one said to me, we're just going to stand back here and take all the time you need. There's no hurry. That didn't make sense to me at all either. So I turned around and I'm looking at the baby like, what is going on? And then, ding, I find myself back in my room again. My eyes pop open. I was reminded in Roswell of that incident, because in Roswell, I was with my then partner at the time, and something happened to us in Roswell. We came in contact with the Grays, and I was given information about the hybridization program. And they reminded me of that visit I had with that baby in the tube. Was that my baby? I can't say for sure. I don't know if I'm blocked from accepting it or it's not. Right now, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know.
So when you say block, you yourself are blocking it, maybe subconsciously, or the ETs are blocking it.
Yeah, maybe I just can't deal with me having hybrid babies. I don't know. I just know all these are possibilities. Because there's a lot that I've done that I know I don't remember. I know that. So either I'm going to remember it when the time is right, when my personal frequency is aligned with the frequency of that information, and we call that an aha moment, but it's information that's been inside of you the whole time. It just has a frequency signature to it. And when you're aligned with that frequency signature, then you're like, I just knew something, but it was there the whole time. Mm. Yeah. So I'm waiting for that. And maybe some things I'll never know, at least in this life, in this body.
What information did they give you about what you might call the hybrid program? Was it saying why they're doing it, or was it something else?
This is the hybridization program. The information I was given was just about grays and humans, because there's other hybridization programs. And before I get into it, I also have questions. Maybe you can help me answer these questions. But I know about the gray and human hybridization program, but that incident I had with the human doctor next to me, and I'm healing these very sickly human hybrid babies. Are the grays involved in that too? Or is that something that humans are doing off to the side and they're not doing a good job because these babies are sickly? Because I talk with experiencers around the world who have met hybrid children, who heal hybrid children. And whenever they're together with the ETs, I can't remember any experiencer that said that they came in contact with a sick hybrid baby of those when they were with the ETs. I'm coming in contact with these sick hybrid babies when I'm in contact with humans. So I'm wondering, are the humans also experimenting and doing their own stuff different from the grays and what the grays are doing? And how many other ET civilizations also have hybridization programs? We can't be the only ones. We know the Chinese and the Russians or whoever are doing some really weird stuff with hybridization and DNA splicing and dicing and creating weird things. We know that's happening on Earth. We're not being told a lot about it, but it's definitely happening. So humans are doing it. So of course ETs are going to be doing it too, I would think.
And so are they producing all these hybrids to one day come on down to Earth, or is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I was told in Roswell was that the grays have started this hybridization program because their race was dying out, because they lost their ability to be empathetic and sympathetic. And so they're dying out. They wanted to save themselves. So they decided to engage in a hybridization program with humans in case we kill ourselves off. And for the most part, the humans that the grays are looking for are people that have maybe a stronger than average psychic abilities, people who are very loving, that wear their heart on their sleeve, for the most part, intelligent people, because the hybrids that they're creating are very loving, they're very psychic, they're very intuitive. At one point, I was told there was a fear within the galactic community. What if a low vibratory or negative group of beings gets a hold of these billions of embryos, as they told me, there's billions of them, because there's millions of people involved in the hybridization program. What would happen if a negative civilization got a hold of these embryos? Would they turn them into killing machines? And I was told, well, they'd make horrible killing machines because they're so loving and kind. So that's not too much of a worry. Then I was also told that as far as the hybridization program goes with the grays, these billions of embryos that have been created are being kept in case we annihilate ourselves. And a few years ago, I was told that we're on the path of that, but it's not too late. We can turn around. And that was a few years ago. I don't know if it's not too late anymore. I'd like to think it's not too late, but we're definitely on that path. And then if we annihilate ourselves, then Earth will be repopulated with these embryos. And maybe other embryos too from other civilizations. But at least I was told by these embryos, Earth would be repopulated. And these embryos are very loving.
Because there's something with the people who have these experiences that ETs will show them scenes, won't they, of apocalypse or climate disasters. I've heard of people being sat down in front of what seem to be huge screens or something, and they're shown all these scenes.
That's not unusual. And we're seeing it today. We're seeing those scenes today. There's one experiencer here in North Carolina. I'm in North Carolina in the United States on the East Coast. There's an experiencer here, and she's come in contact many times with the Grays. And she was told that every time we drill into Earth, we're taking Gaia's blood, and she needs her blood. And that from afar, there's like this dirty gray smoke kind of like element that surrounds our planet. At the same time, and she drew a beautiful painting of this, they showed her Earth from afar, but it had these little dots on it, like little lights, and it formed a grid, like a grid of lights. And every now and then, some of these lights would ding, just burst. And the Grays told her, when we see a little light like that, ding, burst on your Earth, we know that that is a human that just awoke, a human that just had some kind of epiphany, a human that just understood why they're here and what they're supposed to do, a human that just understood we're all one. And as all those lights, ding, 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 ignite, other humans who've also had that realization connect through this grid. They find each other.
It's interesting.
And yes, we're like a connected consciousness. We can feel each other. We know each other. And we can support and help one another, whether we physically see one another or not.
Because I've been having this thing occasionally, it hasn't happened for a few days now, but I'll be going to bed and my eyes will be closed and I'll see this kind of energetic grid and there'll be other images around it, which I can't quite make out. And then I was talking to a guy called Steve Neal. Do you know him?
I know Steve, yeah.
He was saying that he's seeing this and other experiences have said they've seen it, and he drew a picture of it. And he showed it to me, and that's exactly what I've been seeing, this kind of energetic grid. It's just weird that it's coming up.
Oh, that's wonderful. Then we're all getting that message.
You know, I take people through past life regression. It's one of the things I do. And I took somebody into a past life, and I never know which past life's going to show up. And they said they were some kind of aquatic being on another planet. And that they had this job of looking after this other being that was really big. And that when he got much older, he'd be the same as this huge being. But what this huge being was doing was it was kind of psychically sending out positive energy across this planet. And these beings were all over this planet and they were all joined together in a grid to bring this energy down onto the planet. And he was told during this session, one of the spirit guides came through and said, this is your first life on Earth. What you were doing on that planet, you were in training for coming here to spread positive energy.
To work on the grid. There's a lot of us here to work on the grid. And we can do it in many ways. Whatever your own personal abilities and strengths, your talents, your hobbies, what you want to do is completely up to you. How you want to help strengthen the energetic grid on this planet. Some of us are not strengthening it. So some of us have to work extra hard.
Do you feel that perhaps you've been guided to get to the point where you are now, working with experiences? Mm-hmm. It's almost like you are having a spiritual path and you've been on baby steps along the path and all these little incidences are moving you forward and it's all trying to direct you to doing what you're doing now.
Yes, I do feel that. I do believe we have guides and that we can communicate with them for help But as far as another being, some interdimensional being taking me by the hand and saying, we're going to go this way, I don't believe that, because I believe that as a human, we have free choice. I can go any way that I want. It's me making the choice to follow this path. I could easily follow another path. So when we talk about destiny or fate, there isn't really one destiny or one fate for me. It's whatever I choose to do. And if I choose to align with non-human entities to help me understand my role on Earth, then that's my decision and my choice. Because I believe that some individuals put too much power into their spirit guide, or too much power into another being, thinking that they're going to make something happen for them, or even put too much power in the universe. I'm going to ask the universe for this. Well, why do you think the universe is going to decide whether you're going to get something or not? Like, you get something, but you don't. So don't ask the universe, ask yourself. The universe is neutral. The universe doesn't judge what you deserve. You're judging what you deserve. So I just would like to tell people, stop asking the universe as if it has control over you, as if it's going to decide what you want. It's you ask yourself, you tell yourself, and you move from there.
I wanted to ask you about more ET stuff. You talked about being in that space with those hybrid children, and there were humans with you. Mm-hmm. That sounds like that MyLab thing. Have you had those experiences?
Yes, I have. I have about 5 or 6 conscious memories of what I think is MILAB. We really don't even know what it is. Is it one group of people that I've been in contact with, or is it a variety? Now, they're not happy. Some of them are neutral and some of them are horrible. One of them was just downright horrible. It was torture. It was mental torture. And a lot of people who have these MILAB experiences, they know what I'm talking about, because many of these experiences, we are asked, the experiencer or the ET contactee is asked to perform something or to give them information about something. And sometimes we don't want to, because we know that their intention of the information we're about to give them is not good. And then sometimes we're tortured. I was mentally tortured. It was horrible. So my very, 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 very first conscious memory of a MILAB experience came on the evening of the day that I spoke with Kathleen Martin. Kathleen Martin is a world-renowned ufologist, the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. And I had reached out to her for help because I had gotten to the point where I needed help. I couldn't do this anymore. It was right after the two exes showed up on my back. So I reached out to her, and she helped me so much. She changed my life. That conversation was very, very important. And in that conversation, I asked her, what am I supposed to do with all the information the Grays have given me? Because in my mind's eye, I see myself standing on stage talking about this. And back then, that was bananas. There was no way I was going to stand on stage. There was no way I was coming out with this, because I was afraid I would lose all my clients, let alone friends and family. I'm like, my clients cannot know I'm talking to aliens. Like, that is not going to happen. So when I saw that visual in my mind's eye of me freely talking about my ET contact, I'm like, that cannot be real. And I asked her, what am I supposed to do? And Kathy said, I can't tell you what you're supposed to do. You have to figure that out. I'm like, okay, fine. I'm not in any hurry to figure out anything. I'll just let it organically happen. And then organically, here I am. But in that conversation with Kathleen, I said, Kathy, I'm afraid, because I've heard that experiencers are bothered, their phones are tapped, or they're threatened. Is that true? She said, yes. And she told me about a couple of incidents, and things have happened to me. It happens to just about every ufologist I know, non-military civilian. And some are just agitating, but some stop you in your tracks. Some of it's very intimidating. And I'm like, okay, this is too much information for me right now. I'm just going to sleep on it. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do with all this. And it's okay. I don't have to have all the answers right now. So that night, I had my first conscious MILAB memory. And I was in this room. It was under the ground because I had to take stairs to go down. And it looked like a typical government office. You know, that same boring furniture, boring colors. And in each one of my MILAB experiences, or Grant Cameron says it should be called MILAB. No, MILAB, military experiences, MILAB. Some people call it MILAB. And it's always men, young men, 20s to 30s, all dressed the same, like drab clothes, short haircuts, not emotional at all. And in my very first one, that night that I talked to Kathy, one of these men took me to this poster on the wall. I drew a picture of it. And on this poster on the wall was the flight path of a UFO. And along the flight path were these mathematical and scientific equations. Now, I have a biology degree from Loyola, and so mathematical and scientific equations aren't foreign to me. But I cannot remember what those equations were. I just know they were there. And the man standing next to me, we're looking at this chart or this poster, and he turns to me and he says, "When does the spaceship hit the K point?" And then, ding, I'm awake in my bedroom. I'm like, K point. Do I remember studying K point? So I look it up. It's a real thing. And I actually heard it after that in the Winter Olympics when I was watching the sport where they ski up this incline and they go up in the high ski jumping. I don't know what it's called. But the commentator said, the skiers K point, mentioned the skiers K point. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I mentioned it to Grant Cameron, and he sent me this article on an experiencer who came in contact with the Grays, and the Grays were teaching her about the K-point. So I don't remember if I gave that young man an answer or not. And then after that, there were five or six more. Some of them I'm being shown information. I'm taking tests. I'm giving information. The one that was in one of them, I've been sitting in this room, and I've been in that room a couple of times where I'm looking into the room across the way, and there's just a big window in between the room I'm in and the room I'm looking in. I'm sitting at a table in a chair, and there's one or two guys next to me. And a short gray is brought into the room across from me, and the guy next to me says, excuse me, a tall gray is brought into the room in front of me. And the guy next to me says, that's the original gray. And then they take it out and they bring in a middle-sized one. And he said, that is the hybrid of the original. And then they took that one out and they brought in a little one. And they said, that's the hybrid of the original. And I understood that with each one, sentience decreases. So that's why the tiniest ones feel like robots. And maybe that's why I didn't have any telepathic communication with that one that put the two X's on me, because maybe it was more robotic than sentient. The one that was the worst, I really don't want to go into the details, but I was asked to perform some kind of psychic something, and I refused. And they were horrible. They were nasty. And I thought I was going to die.
Do you think that since it happened after you talking to Kathleen Marden, maybe her phone was tapped and that's how these people found you?
Yeah, our phones are tapped. Our computers are. I had someone looking through my camera and then send me an email and tell me what I was doing. I had other things happen. Recently, I had something happen, which was the worst. But I'm not going to talk about it because it scared me so much that I'm not going to talk about it. I'm also not going to talk about what they want me not to talk about because it was that scary and it was that bad. Now, I'm not anyone special. I'm just a tiny little step talk. Who am I? So to intimidate me is kind of surprising. I'm like, why would you even bother with me? Why don't you go mess with these military men who claim that they are giving us secrets? You know, all these military whistleblowers. They're not giving us secrets. You really think that our government's going to let these men loose? Say what you want. Give our secrets away. That's not happening.
So with the Myelabs then, with that incident where you saw the Greys with them, did you get an impression the Greys were like, almost like they were prisoners there? Or they were working with the humans?
It's not a warm, fuzzy feeling when we talk about Milab. So here's some questions. I have questions. We know that our government has been involved in remote viewing for decades. Astral travel, remote viewing, whatever you want to call it. So is Russia, China, other countries. This is nothing new. So our government is pretty advanced in understanding consciousness and the quantum field, how to move through the quantum field. I don't think we give our government enough credit when it comes to what they really know about how to infiltrate our minds. So, I don't know if I told you this story. Did I tell you the story about the men in black that were standing at the foot of my bed?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, and I'm mentioning this because I wonder if it has something to do with the government, the CIA, or this dark government, or whoever these people are. We don't know who they are. I had a friend come stay with me. It was the first time she was coming to my home, and she was a spiritual teacher. And so our first night there, she's in the guest room, which is across the hall from me. And I wake up in the middle of the night because she came into my bedroom and she started getting into my bed. I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I'm scared." I'm like, okay. And then at that moment, I felt something behind me and I turn around and at the foot of my bed, and the room is black. So this being was blacker than the blackness of my room. This tall being with a hat. Hat man, men in black, whatever you want to call it. And I looked at it and then I sensed an energy came out of it, out of its chest. This like ball of energy came out of it and then went into my chest. And it felt like octopus tentacles wrapped around me. And it felt like it was pulling me out of me. It felt like it was grabbing onto my essence and killing me, like just pulling me out of my physical body, not for good reasons. And so luckily I knew at that time that it didn't have to win. I was going to win. And so I just fought it. I said, "Nope, no, you got to go. You got to go. Nope, nope." And it took a while and it was an intense fight. I felt like I was having this spiritual fight for my life. Finally, it went away. I just went back to sleep.
Oh.
So the next morning, we're downstairs drinking coffee, and I asked my friend, "Did anything weird happen last night?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah." "Oh, okay, you go first." I goes, "Well, I'm in your guest room, and I'm looking out the window, and I see up in the sky, the window overlooks the water, and then up in the sky, I see a hologram of Jesus Christ. And this voice in my head says, 'We can do this, you know. We can create a hologram of anything and put it in the sky and fool you.'" Now, this is happening at the same time there's this creepy black figure at the end of my bed. And they're attacked. So I said, "Oh, okay, that's interesting. Well, remember when you came into my room and got into my bed?" She goes, "No, I didn't do that." I said, "Oh, yeah, you did." Whenever something weird happens to me in the middle of the night, I always get up. I make myself take my head off my pillow to make sure I'm awake. So when she did that, I sat straight up to make sure I was awake. Because I never came into your room. I said, yes, you did. He said, no, I didn't. Okay. All right, let's just end this conversation here. Let's change the subject. And then she was there a few more days. We didn't talk about it again. And I thought about it afterwards. And I realized that that being was attached to her because she had just started falling down that rabbit hole of QAnon and Pizzagate and Hillary and eating babies and all that kind of stuff. And it was all really negative, all fear-based. And she had just fallen down that hole. And so when you're immersed in that low vibratory thinking, in that low vibratory space, you're going to align with low vibratory beings. Because, you know, wherever we go with our own posse of people, our own posse of beings. And so she came to my house and she brought her people, her peeps came. And one of them was this man in black that wanted to suck the life out of me. Okay, so what was that? So here she's getting an information saying, we can put a hologram in the sky and fool you. And I'm sure you've heard about the theory that there's going to be some kind of false flag, fake alien invasion and war. Okay, so she was getting information about that. At the same time, there's a man in black. So who's they? Who's we? Can put a hologram in the sky. Who's that? And can our government, whoever this group is, do they have the ability to actually send this kind of being into my room? Do they have the ability to enter my consciousness? Maybe. Maybe that was intentionally sent to me from some organization.
So I find it a bit weird that they'd put this hologram in the sky and then say to someone, we can do this. It's like, why would they tell them that? Why would they show them that? That seems a bit weird as well.
Mm-hmm. But it also validates this theory that we have that, that there could be a false flag invasion. There's a group, multiple groups. I don't know who they are, but they seem intent on messing with us. They seem intent on keeping the truth from us, keeping us in a state of fear. Why else would you give a message like that? That's a message of, we know how to control you. We know how to keep you small. And that's what we're going to do.
And have other people with you seen things? Have you, your husband or boyfriends, have stuff happened?
Yes. Yes. So I'm not with anyone now, but the partner that I went to Roswell with, we had a shared experience in Roswell, shook him up. And he is a very, very illogical person. He was a contractor for the government. And he would often go to White Sands. And so it was one of his trips to White Sands Missile Range that he took me with him. And then we went to Roswell, and that's when that happened. When I went to White Sands Missile Range, I wanted to get the hell out of there as fast as I could. That place is creepy and dark. Creepy and dark. Like, as soon as we got there, all my hair stood up, and I kept seeing in my mind's eye rooms and hallways under the ground. And the missile range is at the bottom of this big, black, dark mountain. And he wanted to show it to me. I was like, oh, God, can we get out of here any faster? So finally, when we were done with the tour, I just ran to the car and I said, I don't ever want to come back here. And then from there, we went to the White Sands Park, where you can slide down these huge, beautiful white gypsum hills. It's like being on another planet. It used to be the ocean. It used to be the bottom of the ocean. And then we went on to Roswell, and then we had this crazy experience. That relationship broke up, and then I had another relationship. We're no longer together either. And it was kind of new in our relationship. And it was in the, he woke up in the middle of the night, I'm sleeping, and I've heard this before. At the time, I had never heard anyone say this, but since then, I've heard this. And he looks up in the ceiling, and he sees this gigantic spider. So gigantic that it's alarming. And he's just transfixed on the spider. And the spider starts to move towards him, getting closer and closer and closer. He's like, should I wake Seb up? Oh, my God, I got to wake Seb up. I'm like, oh, my God, there's a monster spider in here. I'm going to wake her up. And as soon as he decides, I'm going to wake her up, I got to tell her, he said the spider just disintegrated right before his eyes. Disappeared. And I have since heard someone else say that they saw a spider, someone who's also connected with ETs and the other realms. I'm curious if anyone else has seen a spider. I happen to love spiders. To me, it's not a scary thing. I think they're Earth's jewelry, just like flowers and bugs, and I think they're beautiful. My other partner, the one that I went to Roswell with, he would often wake up with strange marks on his body. And what I would say something about it, he didn't want to go there. One time I woke up in the middle of the night and I looked over to his side of the bed, and standing right next to him on the side of the bed was this tall, beautiful light beam. It was golden. It looked like it had a whole, it was made up of a whole bunch of stars. It's beautiful. It was standing next to him and just looking over at him. And so I lifted my head off my pillow like I always do, and I looked at it, and it looked at me, and then it blinked out. So the next day I told him, there was this light being looking over at you. No, no, there wasn't. You were dreaming. I'm like, no, there was, no, no. Okay. So he knew something was going on, but there's a little bit of a battle within him to understand it. But he didn't negate it, and he wasn't a complete believer. He was in between. Because he witnessed weird things.
Yeah, you can't deny it when you have your own experience, can you?
Mm-mm.
And have you had encounters, like you've encountered the Greys, but have you encountered other ETs, like they say the reptilians or the Nordics or any others?
Yes. My first conscious memories of ET contact are at age 10, from 10 to 12. And that was a being that would come and visit me at night. I would be outside and a spaceship would come. And I was always so happy to see the spaceship because it was like I was being reunited with a long lost relative. I was just so happy. The spaceship would hover over me and it was so big that it blocked out the sky and it would land. And a door would open and stairs would descend. And this being would come out, walk down the stairs and greet me. And the being looked very human. It was a young male with dark hair. Very similar to the hair of that hybrid baby that was spitting up blood. Now I'm seeing that now, decades later. And it had on this dark unitard or two pieces, I don't know. And it was just checking up on me. Are you okay? How's it going? Did it ever take me up on the spaceship? Maybe, but I don't have memories of it. So this went on for 2 years. And after each visit, I would come back to my bedroom, ding, like my eyes would pop open. That's a sign of ET contact when you're dropped into 3D reality and your eyes just ding, pop open and you're not sleepy. There's no groggy. You go from dead asleep to wide awake, like that. Like I describe it, like I'm dropped into 3D from another dimension or another reality. And I'm in 10th grade. So I would be really confused because looking around my bedroom, it didn't feel as real as the experience I just had with what I call my space brother. That was real. This is not real. Now I'm 10. I'm like, okay, what kind of thought is this? This is a crazy thought. It's just ignore it. It's time to get dressed and go to school and pretend like you're normal. And that's how I live my life. I'm going to pretend like I'm normal. I lived like that for decades. Now, at the time, I could have said something to my parents. My parents were absolute believers in ETs, astral travel, past lives, all of it. Like I said, they taught me how to meditate in fifth grade. But I didn't say a word to them. I didn't say anything to my mother. My father passed away a few years ago. Until right before I talked to Kathy Martin in 2017, 2018. That was the first time I told my mother everything. So I hid it for decades and decades and decades.
Well, we just about run out of time. This has been great.
Fast.
Yeah. thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been great.
I loved it. Thank you for having me back.
And that was an interview with Sev Tok about her ET contact experiences. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can get a 7-day free trial. And please check out my new book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, and it's on Amazon. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.